Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's solicitations as picked by listeners like you. This is Preview Spotlight number 203 for the October 2024 solicitations, with highlights picked by listeners like you. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items in the upcoming solicitations that you might find interesting. Now, comics are a pre-order business, so whether we like it or not, it behooves us to take a look at what's going to be offered a couple of months out and let our retailers know so they can order appropriately. Now, these episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to promote the comics you love as often as you can. Now, there are thousands of items solicited every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle, or just fly beneath your radar. We'll be starting with the DC Connect catalog, followed by the Marvel's Previews catalog, and then working our way through the Diamond Previews catalog. Obviously, we aren't going to go item by item, or page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and those highlights are picked by people like you. So with that, let's get going. My first pick is the pre-order catalogs, of which there are so many to choose from. There's DC Connect, there's the Image catalog, the IDW catalog, the Marvel previews, the Diamond previews, the Next Phase catalog over at Lunar, and then there are some items that are in no catalog whatsoever, because they're on Kickstarter or some other thing. But we like to cover all of those things here in the Preview Spotlight, and I like going through all of these catalogs. Now granted, it does take a little time. You can get digital copies of all of these. We've got some links in the forum threads for these episodes, but it's a great way to find out what's coming up, what's for you, and what's not. Because not everything is for everybody. There are certain comics some people are going to love, I'm not going to like, some I'm going to like, and other people aren't going to love. And that's great, that's why we do these episodes, but that's also why you need to look at these pre-order catalogs. Not every shop is going to get every comic, so to make sure they get the ones you want, you need to know what you want, you got to let your retailer know. So I recommend picking up the pre-order catalogs, either digitally or physically for the ones that are available physically, because not all of them are. Spend a little time once a month going through it, see what's available, maybe you'll find something that'll become your new favorite comic in the future. So once again, that's the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Image Catalog, IDW Catalog, Marvel Previews, Diamond Previews, Next Phase, No Catalog, and whatever other catalogs come out in the future.
Hello, this is Mike M. from the DC Noise and Geek Brunch podcasts, Mike M's Weekly Reads, and I'm here for my first pick from the DC Previews on page 6. And I am getting old, I have to take off my glasses to read now. So this is New Gods number 1. It's written by Ram V and Evan Cagle. I don't see any interior art on Evan Cagle's. I hope it's Kirby-esque. I hope it's outlandish and in your face. And it deals with an old god dying, and the reverberations of the passing are felt across the universe, setting forth the soldiers of an intergalactic army and awakening the latent powers of the mysterious child on Earth. But this has all been foreseen, prophesied by the Source, and fed as enigmatic images to its agent, Mentron. Now, as Mentron brings the world of this cosmos-shattering prediction to the residents of New Genesis and Apocalypse, both worlds are thrown into chaos and conflict. On Earth, Scott Free and Barda find themselves unaware of incoming chaos while consumed with their most daunting task, parenthood. So this is going to be interesting. Ram V was probably not my first choice for the New Gods, as the New Gods are something that I hold up on a pedestal. It was late in the game when I really discovered them. I wasn't till college, whereas I discovered OMAC very early when I was in grade school. It wasn't until college that I got into the New Gods, and I remember going to a hotel convention and buying a full run of New Gods, and then picking up the Demon and Mr. Miracle, everything that I could. I don't know what started the kick of this, but it made an impression on me. And at the time that I read it, when I was much older, in my 20s, it made an impact on me. Like, Jack Kirby's world building was phenomenal. Like, sometimes the wording was a little weird, but it didn't matter. I was sucked right in, and I became a fan. And ever since that point in time, I have picked up everything New Gods, whether it be Mr. Miracle or any of Orion, the Simonson Orion, anything that I could possibly get and consume. So I'm looking forward to seeing the New Gods, to seeing Mr. Miracle, Light Ray, Orion, Mentron, Highfather, Granny Goodness, Barda. Again, I love these characters. I love New Genesis. I love Darkseid. I love Apocalypse, Desaad, any of the characters that came out of it. I love Superpowers when that was coming out, and the toys, and the fact that they concentrated on a lot of the New Gods. I still have my action figures. I love this property, and I hope you'll join me in giving it at least a try. We'll see how Ram V takes it. The New Gods have been around for quite some time, but never have really spun a lot of total interest. You know, the first series by Jack Kirby lasted 11 issues, then came back in 1977 from 72. That's a pretty big gap, with a different creative team of Jerry Conway and Don Newton. And then the second series was 1984. Was reprints of the original series, and that I did pick up. So I guess my first impression was before I hit college, because I did remember buying these reprints. I don't remember reading them at the time, though, but I remember there were direct sales reprints and getting them at the comic shop. And then the third series was 1989 to 1991, again, short-lived, by Mark Evanier and Paris Collins and Jim Starlin. That was a great creative team. I love the way Paris Collins interpreted the art, and then later on it was Rick Holding and Steve Irwin, but it was a great series that ran 28 issues. The fourth series, and there's been like Death of the New Gods, but I'll just go over the main series, 1995 to 1997, by Rachel Pollack and Tom Payer, with art by Luke Ross. That was pretty good. I've been happy with everything New Gods. The fifth series is this one that's coming to your comic shop near you. And this is, again, DC Connect on page 6 of the Connect, the physical copy. I don't know what it is on the digital, but I assume it's the same. So give it a try, and I'll be back with my next pick.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the DC Connect, and I'm over on page 11 where I'm looking at Challengers of the Unknown number 1, part of the All-In initiative, which honestly, I guess I shouldn't say that. Almost everything is in the All-In initiative. Basically, every monthly book that isn't Elseworld, I think, is part of All-In. It's written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Sean Isaacsy. Isaacsy? Man, I don't know how you pronounce his name. And covered by Mike Diodato. I don't know a lot about Challengers of the Unknown. I haven't read them a ton. I've seen them pop up, I think, in the background of one of the comics, so I really knew nothing about them. And I looked at this cover, and it was cool, but I want to know more about the characters, and I like Christopher Cantwell as a writer, so I figured I'd give this a try, versus other things where, like, there's a new number one, New Gods, but I don't like Ram V as a writer, so I'm not going to be picking that one up, even though I know Ram V's probably, or I mean, the New Gods is probably the bigger title, being Pushmore. It's on the cover of DC Connect. But I'm going to try out Challengers of the Unknown, see if Christopher Cantwell's book works out for me. And it literally just says, spinning out of Absolute Power and the DC All-In Special, the terror of Darkseid Shockwave has cascaded across the DC universe, tearing open the very fabric of time and space itself. Dot, dot, dot. Well, by them just saying that, it kind of ruined everything that's happening, so sorry, spoiler in there. Only one band of super scientists have the right stuff to challenge the fate of a universe. Enter the Challengers of the Unknown alongside the Justice League. And I did notice there are Justice Leaguers on the cover, and they're all wearing red. And it says, where the Challengers run day-to-day operations for massive watchtower base in orbit above Earth, Ace Morgan, June Robbins, Professor Haley, Red Ryan, and Rocky Davis, who are the Challengers, must team up with Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and the rest of the League to seal the rifts that threaten the galaxy. But a mysterious foe from the Challengers' past lurks in the shadow. It'll be a brand new foe to me because I never read it. And in connection to the God Shock, we'll put the DCU on borrowed time. Da, da, da. I'm going to check it out. Literally, it's because of Cantwell. Hopefully, he can interest me with this cast of characters in this book. If not, I'll be quick to drop it and on to my next pick.
My next pick is also on page 11 of the DC Connect. It is Challengers of the Unknown number one. I won't talk too much about it since James just talked about it. I do think it's really cool that they're bringing back the classic version of the Challengers of the Unknown. June seems to be a full member now versus just kind of a sidekick of the team, and that they are the support staff for the Watchtower, kind of tying them in firmly with the Justice League and stuff. I think that's an interesting change. I'm curious if we're going to get the same basic origin of these people having survived something and feeling like they're living on borrowed time, or if they're just scientists and they become a group as part of banding together to work for the Justice League. For that matter, I'm curious how they were picked to work for the Justice League. So anyways, I think this is really cool. It is hard to tell if this is going to be an ongoing or a mini-series or what. Either way, I'm excited to get the Challengers of the Unknown back. I think this is a good use for them. This feels like Mark Waid's handiwork behind the scenes on this, but I'm guessing on that. So once again, that's Challengers of the Unknown on page 11 of the DC Connect. My next pick is also on page 11 of the DC Connect, and it is Superwoman Special number 1. It answers the question of how did Lois Lane get superpowers? Or more accurately, how did she get them this time around? Because this is not the first time she's been Superwoman. I don't even think it's the first time in this continuity she's been Superwoman. But either way, I think it's kind of cool, particularly given how there's another dozen or so superpowered people wearing the Yes Shield in Metropolis these days. Or at least there are some months and not others. It's hard to tell which month this is and if that counts or whatnot. Either way, should be kind of cool, should be interesting. I've always liked Superwoman, the various incarnations. My personal favorite is the Kristen Wells from the DC Comics Presents Annual. But I like Lois. I think giving her powers on and off is not a bad thing if handled well. But I'll be honest, it's kind of a tough thing to handle well. So I'm curious where they go with this. I'm curious how long she gets the powers and how she got them to begin with, and if they're going to address this on and off superpower situation she's had over the years. So, once again, that's Superwoman Special number 1 on page 11 of the DC Connect.
This is Jason with my first pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 16, it's Batman Dark Patterns. Now, I wanted to send a special thank you to Nick's Picks for pointing this out. I'm all about the retro series where it goes back in time and explores some things that may have happened in a superhero's earlier part of their career. And it looks like that's what Batman Dark Patterns covers. It also looks like it's going to be a 12-issue series in which there's going to be different cases, four deadly mysteries from Batman's early years. It says, set during the early years of Batman's career, Batman Dark Patterns delves into four mysterious cases as he attempts to cement his place as Gotham City's protector, while the city itself fights back against him. This is the Dark Knight detective at his most stripped-down core, a man relying on his wits, his skills, and little else as he tackles some of the most twisted mysteries Gotham City and its protector has ever encountered. Case 1, We Are Wounded. A series of sickeningly gruesome murders has sent shockwaves through Gotham. Are these the random works of a serial killer, or is there something more sinister at play? Batman attempts to get to the bottom of the mystery before any more victims are claimed. So, like I said, I do like the idea of going back to the beginnings of Batman's career and seeing how he takes on different cases. And one of my favorite versions of Batman is Batman as a detective, where he is not only trying to solve a mystery or a crime, but he's also trying to anticipate what is going to happen next and try to get there before the criminal does. So I'm looking forward to this. It's only a 12-issue miniseries, and it looks like it'll be focusing on different crimes or different cases. So highly recommend this if you are a classic Batman fan. This is Jason with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 17, it's Two-Face number 1, Harvey Dent's Greatest Trial Begins. It says, after years of internal conflict, both halves of Harvey Dent have reached an uneasy peace. Now Harvey will use his skills as an attorney to resolve the conflicts of Gotham's weirdest and most dangerous criminals, starting with Victor Zsasz. When Zsasz is accused of murdering a fellow member of Gotham's underworld contingent, who better to prove a criminal's innocence than someone who's been on both sides of the law? So Two-Face for me has always been one of my favorite in the Batman Rogues Gallery, mainly because he has both positive and negative aspects. And sometimes he leans in toward the person that he used to be, and sometimes he gives into his new criminal side of him. So definitely a conflicted character, a fleshed out character, and without a doubt, because of his unpredictability and his relationship with Bruce Wayne as Harvey Dent, I really do like the character. So I look forward to seeing what direction they go with this series. This is Jason again with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 19, it's JSA number 2. It says Mysteries Revealed as Jeff Lemire and Diego Orlotiga's JSA continues. Flashback to the events leading into the previous issue as the JSA investigates a break-in at the observatory of Ted Knight, the original Starman. How was the JSA separated and where is the Tower of Fate? What caused the rift between Jade and Obsidian after the disappearance of their father, Green Lantern Alan Scott? And what is the Injustice Society of America plotting? So I am really looking forward to this series. I'm glad that there's an ongoing JSA series for the first time in a while. I hope they do well with it. I really enjoy Jeff Lemire as a writer, and I feel like he's going to do a good job here. I do like the cover that they have, where basically you have JSA members standing around a table with little headshots of different people, different potential members, and talking about members that they want to recruit to join the Justice Society of America. So, and it is interesting that you have Jade and Obsidian arguing on the cover. So I am curious about that. I'm glad they're including the legacy to the original Starman, and I'm hoping that they'll be able to balance both the legacy of the original characters and the passing on of the torch that they've done through the course of the last several years, with having either descendants, kids or grandkids of the original members, or people who are their legacy in terms of inspiration. So I do look forward to this series and highly recommend this if you are a Justice Society of America fan.
This is Mike M. again with another pick from the DC Connect. On page 21, it's Metamorpho the Elephant Man. A while back, I bought the DC CD of thematic songs that came out from their cartoons and movies, and it had pretty much everything. I also remember that Metamorpho song is a pretty cool song. I never saw that original cartoon, but there was a cartoon. Where I became interested in Metamorpho, my first exposure was Brave and the Bold, Batman teaming up with Metamorpho, and then later experiencing him in The Outsiders, which also kicked off from the Brave and the Bold series. It kind of like Brave and the Bold ended and Batman the Outsiders continued, and Batman was having a outing with the Justice League, so he formed his own team, and Metamorpho was one of those characters, and I was very happy about that. So this one is written by Al Ewing. Where I know Al Ewing from that I loved is his run on the Hulk. That was a really good, horrific run and dark run that I absolutely adored. There's been hits and misses for me personally with Al Ewing's, but I'm interested in the character more so than the writer. But I do like Steve Lieber a lot. He'll be doing the artwork on this. It's $3.99 for 32 pages. And I'm sure we'll see Rex Sapphire, as I see her on the cover, and Simon Stagg, who made his theatrical debut in Wonder Woman 1984 or 1987? I don't remember. But Simon Stagg already has been in the films. He didn't have his bodyguard Java, who looks like a caveman, but he is featured in the cover, and so is Element Woman. So where I began to love him was Batman and the Outsiders, and then followed everything that's come since then, whether it be a miniseries or the Outsiders or Batman and the Outsiders, or whether he's in, what was that, Wednesday's Comics featured there. I just adore Rex and his love for Sapphire and all the adventures that he gets into, and having a in-law such as Simon Stagg is just horrific. But yeah, join me in picking up Metamorpho number 1 on page 21 of the DC Connect, and thanks for listening.
Jason again with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 27, it's Flash Comics number 1 facsimile edition, written by Gardner Fox and other writers as well. Cover by Sheldon Moldoff, who's a great, great Golden Age artist. It says, a not-to-be-missed full facsimile reprint of the landmark first issue and first appearance of the fastest man alive, The Flash. A Golden Age spectacular that also includes the first ever appearances of fellow Justice Society of America members and Golden Age heroes, Hawkman and Johnny Thunder, in their own features. So a lot of the old issues series, rather, were more of anthology comics. So even though in this one, of course, Flash Comics, he is the lead character, they had multiple other characters as well. I do not have a copy of this, even though I do have the Flash Archive edition. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to get this copy and be able to enjoy it and show it to my son and show him one of my favorite members of the Justice Society of America and how he got his start. Jay Garrick is a great character, and this is where he gets a start. So you get 64 pages, multiple stories, and $6.99. So highly recommend this if you're a classic Jay Garrick Flash fan. Jason again with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. At the bottom of page 33, it's Batman Full Moon number 3. The streets of Gotham run red. It says, despite Zatanna's warnings, nothing could have prepared Batman for the power he was truly up against under the light of the moon, far greater and wilder than any he's ever encountered before. And when this very same power doesn't just burrow its way into Batman's soul, but consumes him completely, the streets of Gotham will run red with the blood of beasts. So this is a series I've been highly looking forward to. Have not seen the first issue just yet, but I am hoping for a good take on Batman versus a supernatural character and werewolf. And they keep hinting at, and I guess we will find out for sure in issue 1, was Batman bitten or scratched by the werewolf in his first encounter? And is he having problems with controlling the rage and the transformation and things like that that happens where you try to hold on to your humanity, but this being from within, this wild beast, essentially takes over your character. So this is issue 3 of 4. So like I said, I haven't even gotten the first one yet, but I am hoping to be able to check this series out. And if you like seeing Batman specifically against supernatural characters, I think this will be a good pickup for you. This is Jason with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 35, it's the Batman and Scooby-Doo Mysteries number 12. Now, this is a series that I've been picking up since its previous volume, and it's a very, very fun series. It was supposed to be an ongoing series, but it looks like here it says don't miss the final issue. So hopefully they will reboot this, but I think the previous series was also 12 issues. I specifically get this for my son, and what I think is great about it is that it kind of bridges the gap between a Scooby-Doo type of cartoon and Batman the Animated Series cartoon. And this one obviously has a character that, if you saw that original Batman the Animated Series Mask of the Phantasm movie, then you'll definitely recognize the character on the cover. It says, there's a phantasm haunting the Gotham City Opera House. Batman and Mystery Inc. are determined to exorcise the spirit before someone gets seriously hurt. Owner Theatric Al Perry needs it to happen before his retirement fund gets seriously hurt. And Dr. Leslie Tompkins doesn't care about anything but acquiring the building to serve as a new neighborhood clinic so she can help residents who've been seriously hurt. Who will prevail? So once again, I'm kind of sad that this series is ending. I have been getting it for my son for obviously the past year, and then the series before that for him as well. And I think it's a good introduction to Batman specifically, and also the DC Universe for a younger type of reader. So I highly recommend picking up this series if you're a fan of Scooby-Doo, obviously, and Batman, the animated series from the 90s.
Hey, this is James back in the collected editions of the DC Connect, and I'm on page 43, where this is going to be a quick one. I called out, it was a few months back, Batman Nightfall Omnibus, and I just wanted to let you guys know that on page 43, Batman Nightfall Omnibus Volume 2 is being solicited here. So written by Chuck Dixon, Alan Grant, Doug Minch, Dennis O'Neill, and others, and a whole slew of artists. I'm not going to go over all of them. This one is $125. I will get half off through Deep Discount Comics with Eric. 976 pages. This is to complete the omnibus collection. I got to pick this up. Otherwise, I only have part of the story. So Nightfall Omnibus Volume 2 is being solicited. So if you picked up the first one, make sure you pick this one up. On to my next pick.
This is Jason with my last pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 45, it's The Legion of Superheroes, The Great Darkness Saga Deluxe Edition. So I had previously picked this edition up several years ago when they printed it. It looks like this one might have added some, at least one little, it says, I'll just kind of read the solicit here. It says, "This is Earth in the 30th century, a world of peace and light. Preserving this peace is the Legion of Superheroes, a group of young adventurers who are the best and brightest of their kind. But a darkness is approaching, a centuries-old evil that threatens to destroy their entire universe. Herein lies the story of the Legion's greatest challenge. This expanded deluxe edition collects Legion of Superheroes, issues 284 through 296, and Legion of Superheroes Annual 1, and a gatefold character guide featuring the Legion, their allies, and their enemies." So that might be something that's new there. I am hoping that, I wonder if that's the original poster that they gave when they did the first trade paperback. I feel like it's been about 20 years ago, maybe longer. But this was obviously a deluxe edition, so I can't remember if that was in the original one, but I highly recommend this if you've never read Legion of Superheroes and it feels like a daunting cast of characters to get into. This one does back up a little bit, so you get a little bit of context for the Legion before the Great Darkness Saga starts, and so I think that's pretty good, and they go a little bit beyond that part of it as well. So it was, you know, one of my favorite Legion stories. And it showcased almost all of the Legion characters, including Superboy and Supergirl. And obviously, you can see who the villain was. And I think that really helped to revitalize and popularize his character in the DC universe and really present him as a big bad that was hard for, took over the story and made it like a hard character, like the big baddie for a lot of stories to deal with. And so I think that helped to revitalize him and made him very popular in the DC universe. So I do recommend this. I know it is a bit of a hefty price there, but you're getting quite a bit of content. And like I said, one of the best stories in DC Comics history.
My next pick is also on page 45 of the DC Connect, and it is also the Legion of Superheroes, The Great Darkness Saga Deluxe Edition. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not getting this. I've already got a previous edition of this, and I did a back issue spotlight of it back in 2011. Now, this covers like the first full year of Paul Levitt's run on the Legion, which is one of the hallmark runs of the book. I'm looking forward to on the Legion spotlight eventually getting back up to that point and going through these in a bit more detail, because in this back issue spotlight, I had checked with my co-host, are you sure you want to do all of it? Do you want to do just the Great Darkness Saga? Oh yeah, let's do all of it. But this new edition's 424 pages. I'm pretty sure the hardcover we read was just as long. So it's a ton of material. And I'd gone through it. I love this era. I'd taken a bunch of notes. And for about the first half of the material, the co-host was basically rushing to the next issue, to the next issue, to the next issue. And I'm like, but there's a lot of good stuff here. Because he really just wanted to talk about the Great Darkness Saga, which is, again, hallmark arc for the not only the Legion, but this was one of the first trade paperbacks, that material, released for DC. This day and age, we take it for granted that everything is getting collected into a trade paperback, a hardcover, etc. Back in the 80s, there was the Great Darkness Saga, there was the Judas Contract, and I'd be hard-pressed to name any other arc at DC that had been collected into trade paperback that way. It was just a very rare thing. And again, this includes like 8 issues before it, a few issues after it, that kind of a deal. Or I forget exactly where the Great Darkness Saga lands inside of this. But I enjoyed the entire run of material. Not all of it is literally the Great Darkness Saga, but Paul Levitz, I think this is his best writing, and he's done some terrific stuff elsewhere. And definitely, definitely recommend this. If you're curious about the material, again, it was back issue spotlight number 21 that we covered the first year of Levitz's run covering this Great Darkness Saga hardcover. And then Sam and I continued on a couple of years later in late 2016 in Back Issue Spotlight number 35 with the second year of Levitt's run, featuring The Curse, which is kind of a follow-on to the Great Darkness Saga. And again, there was a ton of other great material at the time. So I totally, totally recommend, if you're a Legion fan, picking up Legion of Superheroes, The Great Darkness Saga Deluxe Edition. And if you're curious about the Legion, I think this is probably a pretty good starting point, because it gives you enough issues before to get into the flow of the team before launching into that great saga. So, totally recommend it. Once again, that's on page 45 of the DC Connect.
Hello, this is Mike M. again from Geek Brunch and DC Noise Podcasts, and I'm going to be talking about another book. This will be my final pick. On 153 of the main Diamond previews, it's Image Comics. So looking at it in terms of the main previews, not the Image catalog, but this is Doll Parts, A Lovesick Tale. Okay, Lovesick was a miniseries that ran alongside roughly around the time as Red Room and this book, and it's a dark tale of a Donna Matrix type character in the dark web, in that kind of world. And the writer of the story, Luana Vecchino, I mean, some of the magic of this book is to read the back matter of the story, because it's pretty amazing to see how much research she did about the dark web and how things came about. But it's a new entry in the Lovesick universe from Russ Manning Award, Luana Vecchino, a 12-year-old. Madeline dreads the idea of growing up. She fears becoming like a cruel older girls or facing the contempt of her devoutly religious mother. But most of all, she doesn't want to become a target for the monsters that are out there, hiding in plain sight. However, a stomach-churning discovery forces Madeline to confront the harsh reality that growing up is a hard choice. It's survival. Part coming of age and part horror thriller, Doll Parts is a must-read for both seasoned fans and newcomers of twisted universe of Lovesick, where youth and innocence are nothing more than meat for the cruel. Yeah, it's very dark, so if you don't want to go there, it's probably not a good idea. The cover price is great. It's $3.99. There's all kinds of great covers to choose from. There's like six covers to choose from, and they're all the same cover price, which is pretty amazing. But I'm going to go with cover A because that's what I usually go with. And I'm looking forward to the continuation of this series. And just to give you an update on my collection, I'm 200 books as of this recording from hitting 100,000 comics. It's quite an achievement. I will say there is a cost to having a lot of comic books. It's the cost is a lot of space and actually dollars, because you lose space and you have to use other space. So it's very cost. And sometimes when you're older like me, you start to think, was it such a wise idea to have so many comics? Maybe less was more. And as you grow older, you might want to become a minimalist, because as you see your parents grow older and you see what happens to them and their stuff, and it becomes a little eye-opening as to far where you want to be when you're older. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know where this is going to lead me right now. I'm still enjoying why I buy so many comics. I'm obsessed with them. I love the medium, even if it's just a cover. I love the storytelling. There's very few comics that I don't come away with not liking anything. Like I pretty much like or love everything that I read. I get a lot of experiences out of them, and I'm looking forward to Lovesick coming back. I'm actually excited for it. I know there won't be any more Red Room because we lost its creator, but they were exploring some dark areas of the dark web, and it is very interesting. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, this is probably a book to try out. So again, this is Mike M. signing out, and thank you, John, for doing these, and look forward to hearing this episode. I still listen to all the clips, and sometimes I learn something from somebody's back half previews I wasn't expecting. So we'll talk to you soon, and love your comics and read them. Talk to you later. Bye.
What's up, guys? Patrick here, and I am in the preview section of Image. I'm on the Image internet page. Looks like page 74. I'm at G.I. Joe number 2. I missed calling it out last month because I was busy, but we're looking at this. Story is Joshua Williamson. Art is Tom Riley and Jordi Belair. Cover A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You know, there's a ton of covers. Biggest comic book launch in the decades continue. Cobra Commander unveils his next phase of his plan. Meet the Valkyries, the newest Cobra Special Operatives Unit. And as they race to retrieve the new mysterious weapon, will Duke suffer his first failure as the leader of G.I. Joe? I can't wait to read this. I am off the Larry Hama stuff only because that's a lot to read. It's a lot to catch up on. I picked it up around 200s, I think, from the Larry Hama stuff, and I stopped at 300. I think I picked up 301, 302, but after that, I haven't read anything. And I love this Energon universe, so I'm in all in on this stuff. And if you scroll down onto page 75 of the Image previews, you got your David Nakayama, you have your other art there. The bottom right-hand side with that woman soldier, that cover looks amazing. Hopefully it's not a, I don't know if it's the Derek Chu one, 101 and 100. I don't think so, because it says foil incentive. I don't know, but that's an awesome looking cover. It probably is a Derek Chu cover, and I'm hoping that it's a cover C or something. Nope, 1 in 10 is David Nakayama. I don't know, but that's an awesome cover, and it has a V on her helmet like a Valkyrie, so that's probably the Valkyries. But yeah, I'm sticking with G.I. Joe. On to the next pick.
My next pick is on page 2 of the Marvel previews. It is Time Slide number 1. Now, I'll be honest, I took a look at that cover art by Rob Liefeld, and I'm thinking, ooh, yeah, not for me. But they also have, on the next page, what looks to be some of the, I guess, interior art that looks pretty good. And this is a story of mutant kind getting wiped out again, this time by somebody traveling through time, going backwards. And Bishop and Cable are the two trying to stop this from happening. It's a $6.99 book, which also kind of scared me off, but it's a one-shot. So between what looks to be the interior, what I hope is certainly the interior art, and the one-shot, and just the concept of, again, somebody jumping through time, trying to wipe out the X-Gene from ever happening in the first place, and Bishop and Cable kind of teaming up, because they've got a definite love-hate relationship at times, this looks like it could be fun. Now, I'll be honest, I'm starting to pull back a little on the X titles. Maybe this will get me a little more engaged, maybe it won't, don't know. But it's a one-shot, and I'm willing to give it a chance. So, once again, that's Time Slide number 1 on page 2 of the Marvel previews.
Hey, this is James here. I'm in the Marvel previews, and there's a few things I'm going to point out in this previews for Marvel this month. The first one is on page 4, where I'm going to have to give you a caveat. I'm calling out Laura Kinney, Wolverine number 1, a.k.a. X-23. Now, the cover, like the cover on page 5, which I do like, is it just reminded me so much of the all-new Wolverine, which was X-23, with Tom Taylor's run. Just that cover was really nice. The writer on this, I'm not really excited about, Erica Schultz. She's so-so. Artist Giada Belviso, honestly, don't know. Cover Elena Casagrande. All right, cool. We'll go with that. By the way, if you don't like Elena Casagrande, there's a J. Scott Campbell variant. Probably, instead of getting 50% off, you'll probably get 40% off of the J. Scott Campbell. And that might be the way I go, because I tend to like his stuff. But it says, the best mutant defense. Wolverine takes the fight to those who stand as enemies of mutant kind. Laura Kinney was bred to be the ultimate assassin as X-23. And by the way, I really like her. I really like X-23. Funny thing, my wife used to always tell me about X-23. I was to show her Wolverine. He has like the 3 claws on his hand. And then she saw Laura Kinney. She only had 2 claws. She's like, oh, why does a woman only get 2 claws? I was like, ah, but she's got one on each foot. So now she really likes that because she sees it as an upgrade. But funny, at first she thought she was being ripped off. She's long left behind, but as she encounters mutants being forced to use their powers against their will, Wolverine takes it upon herself to right these wrongs, no matter who stands in her way. Dynamic scripter, Erica Schultz. Okay, I'm not going to read you all that. That's just basically just talking about the creative team. I will tell you, this is a $4.99, 32 pages. The thing that I wanted to warn you about is there's a lot of these things. I go through the order form from Deep Discount Comics, and this is a problem with Marvel not synchronizing their order form with their catalog, which for the life of me, I can't understand. And Marvel knows it's happening. You're like, how do I know that they know it's happening? Okay, every time you see this, like I went into my catalog or my order form last month and I kind of looked line by line through Marvel, and this was one of the comics I saw and it was not in the catalog last month. I'm like, huh, well, that sounds like something I want, so I added it in. This month, the catalog comes out, but the order form has already gone. So you have to add this at final order cutoff or email Eric. He'll probably add it for you because it's probably not on FOC. But the way you tell in the catalog that it's one that was on the previous order form is Marvel literally puts it down on the bottom at red, order using that this whole number, which is telling you it's last month's order form. You know it's last month's order form. Put it in the right catalog. Do not print it in the wrong catalog and give me a little red line pointing towards the other order form. You know, and it kind of frustrates me with Marvel that they can't get their act together. And literally on the next page, just so you know, another comic that I may pick up because it's Al Ewing doing all new Venom, that whole Venom War thing's over, and I'm just going to see who the all new Venom is once again at the bottom, order using that, because it was on last month's order form. So here it is, a new number one being solicited. You can't add it unless you do the FOC route. Very frustrating. I am going to pick it up. I want to point that out to you guys. If you're interested in Laura Kinney Wolverine or All New Venom, add them at FOC or email your retailer now because they were never on the order form and you may not have seen it last month. Comic buying in 2024. Here we are. Okay, on to my next pick.
My next pick is on page 12 of the Marvel previews. It is TVA number 1. I'll admit to having slightly mixed feelings on this because it's very much a matter of them taking something that kind of worked well in the Loki TV series and kind of cramming it into the Marvel Universe on top of the existing TVA. Because we've got Captain Peggy Carter, we've got Mobius, we've got Miss Minutes or whatever it was. Definitely aspects of the TV show, which I enjoyed and thought was good. We also get Spider-Gwen and possibly one or two other familiar characters. I mean, Mobius existed before, but this is very much the TV version. And we've also got a few of the other characters from the show. I like the alternate timeline aspects of Marvel, but when you've got a multiverse and you've got a timeline that's branching and collapsing and changing and whatnot, versus isn't that just another branch of the multiverse or what have you, or another parallel line there? Gets a little confusing. I really doubt they're going to address that whatsoever. But the art we see looks good, looks pretty clean, and the likenesses for the people from the TV show definitely match. And part of what makes me think they're leaning heavily on that is the writer, Catherine Blair, is credited with Loki Season 2, so definitely worked on the show and kind of bringing that some of into the comics. And I always find it a little humorous slash frustrating when there's something in the comics, it spawns a TV show or movie, and then they take the TV show or movie version and have it supplant the comic version. So we'll see how well-read Catherine Blair is on the comic side of things, and if it holds true to the Marvel Universe of the comics versus the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Either way, Perry Perez does some solid art, and it's a 5-issue miniseries, so I'll give it a shot, see what I think. Hopefully it'll be a lot of fun. So once again, that's TVA number 1 on page 12 of the Marvel previews.
This is Mike M. again with my next pick, this one coming from the Marvel previews for December of 2024. And it's Hellhunters number 1 by Philip Kennedy Johnson and Adam Gorman. Cover by Jonas Skaroff. Variant cover by Adam Gorman. Another cover by Terran Clark, and TBA, to be announced. That person's awesome. But this series has been pretty good in terms of the character was introduced in The Hulk, Philip Kennedy Johnson. I really like what he did with Action Comics and Superman and bringing about the new Kryptonian, the Kryptonian kids and all kinds of stuff, and making the John Carter Warlord of Mars reference, which is something that inspired the writers and artists of Superman to begin with, to go back to like what inspired them and put it into a story arc on Warworld was pretty cool. And I like what he's doing with the Hulk. It's not quite as good as what I liked with Al Ewing's run, but it's good. And the best issues were the issues with Ghost Rider 44, which is going to be in the Hell Hunters. And I assume the Hell Hunters are going to be featuring Captain America, Bucky, Wolverine, Sergeant Fury, Agent Carter. So, yeah, I think that's who the Hell Hunters are. And Ghost Rider 44 is going to be each part of it. In the Hulk, he was like a protector of a little Hispanic kid. The Hulk is kind of like wandering the United States right now with a little girl. He's the protector of the little girl, and the little girl's almost like a protector of the Hulk in a strange way. But there's monsters everywhere, and it's like a monster of the week, you know, running into a different monster of the week. And they went through one town that introduced Ghost Rider 44, and I was like, man, this is a pretty cool concept, because we've had Ghost Riders throughout history. And this was a World War II Ghost Rider, which I was really excited to see. And we're finally getting some backstory on that character. This should have the origin of that character. And they're going to be against a Nazi officer named Felix Bruckner, becomes a host for an unspeakable evil. And it's up to the Hell Hunters to take him down. So it's almost like a Invaders of World War II story without their costumes, but they're actually fighting. So here we go. We'll see what happens, and hope you join me in checking this out, especially if you enjoyed Ghost Rider 44 in the Hulk. So we'll talk to you soon with some more picks.
Hey, this is James here with my next pick in the Marvel catalog, and I'm over on page 22 where we have Ultimate Universe 1 Year In number 1 by Denise Camp. Artist is Jonas Schraff. By the way, Denise Camp is doing Ultimates, the book with the ends with an S, Ultimates. And it literally says in bright red, the clock is ticking down to the Maker's arrival. For those of you who have not been listening to the monthly spotlight and have not heard John and I talking about how we enjoy some of the Ultimate books, some more than others, but all of the Ultimate books, except for X-Men, which I did drop, they're talking about the Maker's been basically put on hold. I'll just leave it at that. For 18 months. So the heroes are kind of becoming heroes, and things are happening in the Ultimate world without the Maker. So the clock is ticking down to where the Maker is coming back, who basically built this alternative universe, this alternative world dimension, where, or I should say multiverse, where basically he kind of squashed all of the superheroes. You know, he's crushed the spider that was supposed to bite Peter Parker. He did something with the Fantastic Four so they didn't get irradiated in space and get their superpowers. So all these things happened, and he created his own world where basically the bad guys are in charge. Okay, so it says the clock is ticking down to the Maker's arrival. Denise Camp flips the narrative on the Ultimates and takes us inside the Maker's Council. So these are the people who are, you could call them like the governors for the Maker, or the lieutenants. The heroes of the Ultimate Universe aren't the only ones who have been preparing for the return of the Maker, and the clock is ticking down. This unique one-shot sets the stage for the second year in the Ultimate line and includes the debut of the Ultimate version of two major Marvel characters. So there we go. Kinda cool. I'm gonna pick it up. If you're reading the Ultimate books, I think you want to pick this up. It's going to tie in, and Denise Camp is writing the Ultimates book, so it's definitely going to tie into everything that's going on. I've been really enjoying the Ultimate Universe other than Ultimate X-Men, which is more like a manga, and it didn't even feel like the X-Men. It was very weird. It felt so other than the other books. Not bad, just not what I'm me wanting to get from the Ultimate Universe. So definitely pick this one up. On to my next pick.
This is Jason with my first pick in the Marvel Previews catalog at the bottom of page 47. It's Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu number 3. Silent Night equals Violent Night. He may be back from the dead, but Moon Knight is already in the fight of his life, as dangerous operators on both sides of the law target heroes, villains, and civilians with callous disregard for safety. Joke's on them, though, because Moon Knight also has a callous disregard for safety, and his is bigger. So this is the new series by Jed MacKay, even though it's a continuation of the old series of Moon Knight, and then eventually Vengeance of Moon Knight, and now it's retitled again to Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu. So I'm just really glad they've kept the same writer, Jed MacKay, who I think has done a great job with his run on Moon Knight. I highly recommend this if you're any type of a Moon Knight fan or a street-level character fan. And the artist, I do like the way he draws the character as well, and the supporting characters. So I highly recommend this new series, which is a continuation of the other two series by Jed McKay, and I hope his run continues for quite some time. This is Jason with my next pick in the Marvel Previews catalog. On page 50, it's Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars number 12, facsimile edition. It says, Marvel's monthly celebration of the finest superhero crossover of them all reaches its shocking conclusion. Earth's greatest heroes are dead at the hands of the all-powerful Doctor Doom. Or are they? As that doubt and the meddlesome claw gnaw away at Victor Von Doom, will the combination of his reality-altering might and troubled subconscious prove his ultimate doing? Get ready for Battleworld to host its final battle. But when the dust settles, who will be left standing to return home, and who will choose to remain behind? It's one of the all-time great Marvel comic books, boldly represented in its original form, ads and all, reprinting Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars number 12. So this actually culminates in the last issue of this miniseries that they reprinted, and it's been a fun ride to kind of go through these again. I've been collecting these for my son, with the idea that he would enjoy these, you know, single issue at a time versus in a trade paperback. It basically has all of the characters of who's who of Marvel 40 years ago, back in 1984. It's hard to believe it's been that long, but a definitely well thought of series with a wonderful story, pitting together lots of classic heroes and villains. And so this is the end of this series. My hope is that they will continue with Secret Wars 2 after this and do that as a facsimile edition. I do have the trade paperbacks for both, but I think there is something to be said of reading the single issues one at a time. So I highly recommend this if you are a classic Marvel Comics fan.
What's up, guys? Patrick here, and I am now in the Marvel previews. I thumbed through it two or three times because I only am getting like four or five books, and usually I get like 10, 15 books from Marvel. They have chosen to end books for me, so I'm literally getting Ultimate Spider-Man, The Ultimates, and Incredible Hulk. I'm calling out Incredible Hulk on page 65, because Incredible Hulk is always one of my favorites. I'm always going to pick up this book. This is kind of one of those books that, like, I'll read it, and even though some people may not agree that it's a good run, I'll still pick it up and read it, kind of like some other books that you guys read, even though it's not a great run, but you still pick them up. But I'm actually enjoying The Incredible Hulk. We're on number 20, so Philip Kennedy Johnson is still the writer. Danny Earls is the artist, cover by Nick Klein. We have Wolves at the Door. In the aftermath of Banner and Charlie's dramatic escape from Las Vegas, they are back on the road and lying low, or so Banner thinks. But as Charlie goes off in the night to revel in the newfound power she doesn't understand, she's found by Werewolf by Night, who warns her about the consequences of what she's done, what she's becoming. Meanwhile, Hulk is hunted down by one of those consequences, one of the oldest and most powerful creatures on Earth, the immortal wolf demon Varkolak. I have no idea what a Varkolak is. Didn't look it up yet. We're still at our $3.99 price on this, at least 32 pages. Can't wait to read it. Still collecting the Incredible Hulk. All right, on to the next pick. Like I said, for Marvel, I don't have any more dog ears in my books, so I don't have many more books to go for this previews here.
This is Jason again with my next pick in the Marvel Previews catalog. On page 78, it's Silver Surfer, Return to the Spaceways Omnibus. I will be definitely getting the Ron Lim cover. I just really like the way he draws the Silver Surfer. And even though I don't know if it was the first comic I read with the Silver Surfer in it, I definitely like Ron Lim's interpretation of the Silver Surfer. This is essentially a Silver Surfer Omnibus Volume 2, with the first one covering his early appearances in Fantastic Four, his original Silver Surfer run. This one picks up with Silver Surfer 1982 number 1, which is, I guess you could kind of say, a Volume 2 series, even though it was a one-shot. Silver Surfer 1987, issues 1 through 33, and annual 1 through 2. Marvel graphic novel Silver Surfer, just called Silver Surfer, 1988, issues 1 and 2. Silver Surfer, The Enslavers. Fantastic Four, issue 325, Supervillains Classic number 1, and it also has material from Epic Illustrated number 1, Marvel Comics Presents number 1, and Marvel Fanfare number 51. So this packs a ton of content into it. It's 1,360 pages for $150. Now, personally, I, even though I'm calling out this book, I have almost all of the Silver Surfer collections in epic collection format versus omnibus. I didn't know that they would ever like print a lot of these. And so where they have been cranking out the epic collections, the omnibuses have been way behind with just a volume one, or the, you know, the original Silver Surfer collection, and then also doing one later with a later series. So, but anyway, this has lots of great classic stories. To me, one of the high areas of the Silver Surfer story, even though obviously this is maybe a little bit before, I think you get into the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, and Infinity Crusade, but it does set up a lot of potential future stories. So if you're looking for some great classic 90s and before 80s, 90s type of Silver Surfer, spaceways, traveling out into space, and having all these wonderful adventures, running into great characters, and interacting with some of the classic characters that we know that live on Earth, I highly recommend this. And as a huge Galactus fan as well, you get to see him quite a few times. So I think this is a great pickup for anybody who is a fan of cosmic Marvel comics.
Welcome to October. This is Chris Brawley. I go by Brawlinator on the forums. And my first pick for this month's previews is going to be in the Marvel catalog. It's on page 78, and it's this Silver Surfer Omnibus. I think the exact title of it is Return to the Spaceways. So Silver Surfer, Return to the Spaceways. This is actually volume 3 of the original Silver Surfer, or that's what it contains. I think that there was, this might collect Silver Surfer volume 2 also. It does not collect much of Silver Surfer volume 1, like issue 1 from 1982. I think it was 18 issues in the first volume. Then John Byrne, I think, did a couple of issues for volume 2, which did not take off. But this one is the longest, and this one means quite a bit to me. This is when I first got turned on to artist Ron Lim, and he was on this for just a very significant run. And it's when Thanos came back, the Infinity Gauntlet started here. Just a spectacular run. Now, those issues, Infinity Gauntlet, I don't think those are collected here. No, this collects that 1982 issue, an annual graphic novel, Silver Surfer, Silver Surfer, the Enslaver, Supervillain Classics, number one, which I think is actually Galactus's origin story. It was fantastic material from Epic Illustrated, which I think is going to be some of that John Byrne stuff also. Marvel Fanfare, Marvel Comics Presents, number one. But the bulk of this is that volume 3 of Silver Surfer, issues 1 through 33, just when Ron Lim really just found his wheelhouse for this character. And I've been a fan of the Space Sentinel ever since I saw a sticker for him back in the Bronze Age somewhere. I just thought, how cool is this chrome cosmic Avenger, this Sentinel of the Spaceways is his nickname. I'm into the omnibus. I'd love to own this and hopefully get the entire run. I do actually have that entire volume 3 run of the Silver Surfer. I think it goes up to 130 something issues, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to look. I should have pulled that information before I recorded this. And I'm definitely going to get the Ron Lim cover. There is a second cover by Jim Lee, which usually, you know, I like Jim Lee's work, but not on the Silver Surfer. Ron Lim's got it hands down for me. I'm definitely going to be picking this up. It's got John Byrne also, of course. It does say here that it does have some of that John Buscema content and Mobus, his content that he did. But really, for me, it is the Ron Lim work that is bringing me to this. Of course, you've got writers Jim Valentino, Tom DeFalco, Steve Englehart, Stan Lee, John Byrne, Keith Pollard, Mark Gruenwald, and more. But this is the Sentinel of the Spaceway soaring on his longest running series. This really was the height of my comic book collecting back in the day. So I'd really like to maybe sell my floppies, get rid of a couple of long boxes, or at least I think it's like a long box and a half or so, and just have maybe a nice 3 or 4 volume set of Omnis. I'm definitely going to pick this up. It comes out in April, and it is, like I said, it's found on page 78 of the Marvel Preview, Silver Surfer, Return to the Spaceways Omnibus.
This is Jason with my last pick in the Marvel Previews catalog on page 82. It's Giant Size Marvel Omnibus. I will probably be picking up the Dave Cockrum cover. It's a classic cover from Giant Size X-Men number one. But I like this series, this particular collection. It's a huge omnibus. It has 1,304 pages for $150. And it covers all these classic Giant Size comics. It looks like they're mainly from the 1970s, but this is when they took special series or particular ongoing series, and they would run like anywhere from one to sometimes five or more issues, and they would do longer stories with these characters. So it's unbelievable some of the classic material that it has here. But it has pretty much every notable character from the Marvel Universe in the 1970s. So it says collecting Giant Size Superstars number one, Giant Size Fantastic Four, issues 2 through 4, Giant Size Superheroes featuring Spider-Man number one, Giant Size Spider-Man 1 and 4 through 5, Giant Size Chillers featuring The Curse of Dracula, Giant Size Dracula issues 2 through 5, Giant Size Creatures featuring Werewolf number one, Giant Size Werewolf issues 2 through 5, this is Werewolf by Night, Giant Size Defenders issues 1 through 5, Giant Size Avengers issues 1 through 4, Giant Size Man-Thing 1 through 5, Giant Size Chillers 1 through 3, Giant Size Super Villain Team-Up issues 1 through 2, of course the Giant Size X-Men number 1, which is the cover of this on one of these omnibus covers, and Giant Size Invaders number 1. So these were these, you know, huge epic stories that they really kind of fleshed out the story, and you felt like you're getting, even though it was a Giant Size longer comic, and you were paying more for it, you were getting more bang for the buck. So it felt like you were getting your money's worth. And these have been collected in, I think, Epic collections and maybe other individual character omnibus collections for a lot of them. But this is the first time they've all been collected together. And I know at some point I kind of gave up on getting these Giant Size collections, but this is a way that you can basically get them all in one giant collection. So lots of great stories here, great material, and a classic era in Marvel Comics. So definitely recommend this. You guys check this one out.
Hey, this is James back with another pick in the Marvel previews, and I'm over on page 84, where it's actually a reprint omnibus. I already have this material, so I will not be picking this up, but I wanted to point it out because it's been out of print for a long time, and it is very, 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 very popular. Honestly, this is... I'm not going to say it's the best Marvel event. In my opinion, Civil War was the best Marvel event, just my opinion. But this was maybe number two for me. It was really, really good. And that's Annihilation Omnibus. And it has a Gabriel Delgado cover, and it says in big, bold, new printing. It's written by Keith Giffen, Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning. Everyone remembers that team, Abnett and Lanning. They did a really good job together. Javier Grillo Mark Suach. Okay, I'm butchering that. And then Simon Furman, Christos Gage, and Stuart Moore, penciled by everyone and their brother, so tons and tons of them. And it is the complete cosmic event that brought Marvel Space superstars back in explosive widescreen sci-fi style. And that is exactly what this was. It got me really excited for space in the Marvel Universe. Before it was there, but it was never front and center. And this took it, in my opinion, front and center. And it was just an epic, an exciting event. It was a ton of fun. So this is a way to read it all together. It's all collected here. And what does this include? It includes the Annihilation Prologue, Annihilation Nova 1 through 4, Annihilation Silver Surfer 1 through 4, Annihilation Super Scroll 1 through 4, Annihilation Ronin 1 through 4, oh sorry, Drax the Destroyer 1 through 4, Annihilation 1 through 6, Annihilation Heralds of Galactus 1 through 2, and Annihilation Nova Core File. It's 880 pages for $125, but if you pre-order it from Deep Discount Comics, you'll get right at 50% off, so you'll pay $62.50 for all of that content, which if you price it out, it's not that bad. It's not a bad deal. And I think the omnibus format is a really nice format. It's beautiful, looks good on a bookshelf, and you can have everything in your hand, the whole event, without basically like 50 floppies laying around. It's still fun to read the floppies. I have the floppies. I have this whole thing in floppies. But this is something where I definitely needed the hardcover. I wanted to point it out because it's back in print, and this is a good one. On to my next pick.
You know, if you like Ed Brubaker and you're a fan of the Fantastic Four, this book on page 99 of the Marvel previews is something you really should check out. It's Dr. Doom, Books of Doom. Now, this is actually a 6-issue series that really just went into and told the origin story of Victor Von Doom. It's a fascinating story. Brubaker takes plot holes and some of the more illogical aspects about what we already know about Dr. Doom's past, and he just fills those holes perfectly. Gets into when he was a boy, his college years, how did he get his mystical skills, create his armor. It's really a fantastic story. Honestly, I think it's underrated. Came out back in 2007. It was just fantastic. I think this has been collected before. It does say it's a new printing. It's got a great Doom cover by Alex Ross. Let me check the solicit here. From the black steppes of Eastern Europe to the college campuses of New York City and finally to the throne of Latveria. This is the life of Victor Von Doom, from his earliest disasters to his scientific triumphs to the tragedy of the fractured man he would become. This is the story you know and the one that you don't. The story of the missing years and the journey that shaped the man who would be king. An epic tragedy in comic book form. This is unlike any Doom story you've ever seen. I concur. Witness Victor Von Doom's life from his earliest moments to the day he took the throne of Latveria in this sweeping saga of tragedy, madness, and destiny. Yeah, it's 152 pages. That's retailing for $19.99. I definitely recommend everybody pick this up. Obviously, you can get it at a discount through Cowabunga or most online retailers, Things from Another World and DCBS. I prefer Cowabunga and our friend Eric. But check it out. It's Books of Doom. It's in the Marvel catalog this month on page 99. Books of Doom, the trade paperback, collecting issues 1-6.
This is Jason, and this is actually my last pick in the Marvel Previews catalog. I had forgotten about this one, but this is a fun series. It's on bottom of page 108. It's Savage Avengers by Jerry Duggan, Volume 2. Now, this is basically a complete collection format, or epic collection format, maybe not quite as big, but this does finish the Savage Avengers series, which they had Volume 1 solicited a few months back. This completes the series with issues 13 through 28 and Empire Savage Avengers one-shot. It's 392 pages for $44.95. So this series was important for me because they really incorporated Conan into the then-current Marvel Universe and had him with a rotating cast of characters. So it went from a team book with Conan and several other characters into a team called the Savage Avengers. And then essentially they started dropping out one by one, and then it became almost like either Marvel's 2-in-1 with the Thing and another character, or Marvel Team Up, which had Spider-Man and another character throughout the, you know, each and every series. So this was a really fun series, and this is a nice collection to pick it up in. It says, surprising allies join the final battle to save the world from the sorcerer Kulan Gath. Conan the Barbarian, Wolverine, Black Widow, Hellstrom, Brother Voodoo, Magic, and more stand against Kulan Gath. And when the ancient evil's plan involves the international drug trade, you can bet on the Punisher crashing the party. But what brings the Black Knight and the Juggernaut into the fray? Imprisoned on Riker's Island, Conan breaks out with Deadpool's help, only to face the King in Black symbiote invasion. Plus, Spider-Man cuts in on Conan's riotous team-up with the Rhino, and Ghost Rider roars into the scene, and Doctor Strange returns to help the Savage Avengers overcome the monstrous and mystically charged Kulan Gath with the fate of the entire planet in the balance. So I do highly recommend this series if you are really any of these characters, but specifically a Conan fan, because he's pretty much in every issue. But it is a rotating cast of pretty cool characters. So, like I said, this is one of my more fun series the last several years, so definitely recommend you guys pick this one up.
What if you knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, what was going to be solicited next month? What would you order? There's no easy answer, since we don't get next month's Marvel previews today.
Okay, bonus points for anyone who catches the reference there. My next pick here is on page 111 of the Marvel previews, and various pages of next month's Marvel previews. Once again, as is par for the course and has been for a while, Marvel is putting things on the order form that are not in this month's Marvel previews. Specifically, and I'm going to list them all this time around, or at least all that I've noticed, because there's a lot. All New Venom number 2, Amazing Spider-Man 65, Avengers 22, Cable Love and Chrome number 1 of 5, Daredevil 17, Deadpool Wolverine number 1, Elektra Red Band number 1 of 5 polybag, Fantastic Four number 1 facsimile edition, Magic number 1, Miles Morales Spider-Man number 28, Namor number 6 of 8, New Champions number 1, NYX number 7, Rogue the Savage Land number 1 of 5, Sam Wilson Captain America number 1 of 5, Sentinels number 4 of 5, Spectacular Spider-Man number 11, Spider-Gwen the Ghost Spider number 9, Star Wars Ahsoka number 7, Star Wars Battle of Jakku Last Stand number 2 of 4, Ultimate Black Panther number 12, Ultimates number 8, Uncanny X-Men number 8, Werewolf by Night Red Band number 6, What If Galactus, Galactus Transformed Gambit number 1, What If Galactus, Galactus Transformed Hulk number 1, What If Mickey and Friends Became Fantastic Four number 1, Wolverine number 5, X-Factor number 6, X-Force number 7, and X-Men Xavier's Secret number 1. All of those are hidden away on page 111 of the Marvel previews, and are going to be in the order form this month, but in the catalog next month. So, you've been warned. These are things to keep an eye out for in the order form if you are interested in any of these titles, and I'm going to guess that you're probably interested in one or two of them at the very least. I mean, I'm kind of curious about the New Champions number 1. I mean, I'm certainly not going to order it sight unseen, or solicitation unseen, but by the time I see the solicitation next time around, I'm not going to have it on the order form. So, Marvel, what are you doing? This does not make any sense to me. If you need a higher lead time or whatever, that's fine. Put the stuff in this month's catalog, and if you want to repeat it next time, that's kind of okay too, as long as you note that, hey, this is a reminder solicitation or something like that. But not having it for us to see when we have to order it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. So, once again, on Marvel Previews, page 111 is the Marvel checklist, complete with some surprise bonus items.
This is Jason with my first pick in the Diamond Previews catalog. On page 95, it's the Green Hornet Miss Fury number 2. It says, someone has murdered the Silver Shrike, and finding the culprit has become a matter of honor for both the Green Hornet and Miss Fury, each of whom regarded the man behind the Shrike's mask as a personal mentor. But solving the case quickly is also becoming a matter of survival because the killer is now targeting other costumed crime fighters, and either of them could easily be next. The danger hits home for the inexperienced Miss Fury when she runs into the Emerald Vigilante while investigating the mask murders, only to find that it's up to her to keep the Green Hornet from becoming the latest victim. So this is kind of a noir, hard-boiled series between two classic characters from the golden age of comics, old-time radio, as well as Sunday comics, like the Daily Comics and things like that. So this is two really cool characters and pretty much completely different styles, with one being more of a detective, kind of a Batman type of character, and the other one being more of a vigilante. So think like a predecessor of Catwoman. So I highly recommend this series. You've got Alex Segura as the writer, who's doing the Dick Tracy series. So expect a good series to check out. This is Jason again with my next pick in the previews catalog. On page 107, it's Johnny Quest number 5. So I've only read the first issue of this series, but it's been tons of fun. It is set in a future. It's not quite in the 1960s like I had hoped, but my hope is that they will get back to that at some point if this series lasts. It says, Johnny's Boy Out of Time adventure comes to an explosive end in this special 25-story page finale, as the Quest family takes on Dr. Zen one last time. But even if they can bring their old enemy down, how will they ever be able to return home? And even if they do find a way, will they be able to resist the urge to use their knowledge of what's to come to change history? Find out in the shocking answers in Johnny Quest 5. So my hope is that this won't be the end of the series, but that it'll just be the end of this story arc. And so I do look forward to seeing what Joe Casey can do here. And my hope is that he will bring them back to their timeline, and then that we will have more adventures in that retro 1960s time, which was a nice thing that they did in the cartoon series. But they definitely had technology that we didn't quite have at that time. And so I think that's kind of what made it fun, that pseudoscience of the cartoon world that they lived in. So I do hope that we get back to that and that we get more and more stories with Johnny Quest and the cast of characters that make them so much fun. This is Jason again with my next pick in the previews catalog. On page 124, it's Conan the Barbarian number 18 by Jim Zub, writer, and Danica Brin, artist. It says, with new Conan artist Danica Brin, which is, she's from a series called Chef's Kiss, which I'm not actually familiar with. It says, Conan the Barbarian and Belit, pirate queen of the Black Coast, are in their prime, enjoying a life of decadence and debauchery. But a flagrant flash of wealth brings unwelcome attention from thieves with a taste for hunger and agents from Stygia on a dark mission for their serpent god. So I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of adventure that they run into. I'm assuming that this kind of occurs in a time before the Queen of the Black Coast Robert E. Howard story, or I would say in the middle of it, actually, since it covers both the first meeting and his goodbye to Belit. But I do look forward to seeing what direction they're going to take this. And it looks like, you know, they spent years together traveling around as pirates. So I look forward to seeing what kind of story that they come up with here. So Jim Zub is doing a great job here and looks like kind of a new story arc with one of my favorite Conan characters, Belit. This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog. On page 125, it's Savage Sword of Conan, number 6. It says, featuring the conclusion of Jason Aaron and Jeff Isherwood's King Conan epic two-part comic, a haunting Dark Agnes story from writer Michael Downs and artist Piotr Kolaski, a chilling Conan prose story from Matthew John, Titanic covers from Alex Horley and Jason Sean Alexander, a slew of astounding art pinups, and more. Issue 6 closes out the first year of Savage Sword of Conan with the bloody bang. So I have not been able to read the first part of the Jason Aaron King Conan story, but I know I have a good feeling it's going to be good. I think one of the important things for me is this is probably the series that's working the best overall. Like every time it comes out, I think it's the best way to read Conan is in these longer magazine formats. And the important thing, it says Savage Sword of Conan number 6, and right next to it in parentheses, it says ongoing. So the good news is this is an ongoing series now. It is very popular, and I hope that they will continue to do well with it and put really future classic stories there. And so they've got better with both the art, and I don't know if it's both the printer or the artists, you know, depicting it as black and white stories, but it's definitely worked much, much better the last few issues. So I look forward to checking this new Savage Sword of Conan featuring the conclusion of the King Conan story arc.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the main previews catalog, and I'm over on page 125. By the way, it is definitely the October catalog. This stuff's going to be coming out in January because there's kind of slim pickings. The first thing that I found in the main previews catalog is 125 pages deep. And it's Savage Sword of Conan number 6, the ongoing Savage Sword of Conan. And I wanted to just point this out because there's been stronger issues of Savage Sword of Conan, a little bit weaker. And I feel like when they flipped the switch to go to ongoing, they brought in some new creative talent and they really got their ducks in a row. Because the last two, I think I did a recording on number 5. Once again, I'll point it out, Jason Aaron is doing King Conan. And this is the second part of the two-part. I'm on board for that. That's going to be epic. Dark Agnes tale from writer Michael Downs. And a chilling Conan prose story, which the prose story, I'm kind of like, eh, it's okay. One thing that I thought was really cool, the covers on this thing, just like the old Savage Sword of Conan's, it seems like the covers are just getting better and better. They have one, it's an alternate cover by Alex Horley, which is fine, but they have Jason Sean Alexander on cover A, and it's a King Conan, and it looks just epic. He looks burly, he looks grizzled, he looks older, because he's the king at this point, and I just think it's fantastic. Jason Sean Alexander, I really like him as an artist. So anyways, I'm happy with Conan. I think Titan's doing this whole thing justice with the license. So support Conan and pick it up. And pick up Savage Sword of Conan. On to my next pick.
Brawlinator again. I am joining others in the main previews catalog. And I'm looking at a book that just
basically slipped past my radar. I had not heard of it, didn't know anything about it. And it's written by Brooklyn99 and Saturday Night Live's Adam Sandberg. I don't typically go for celebrity written books. I mean, I know there's been a couple out there. I won't name any names because most of them I thought were quite awful. This is actually two writers, Joe Troman, who a bit of an emo rocker, if you will, and Rick Remender. Sandberg, obviously, you know him from SNL. He did Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping, which was pretty silly. I mean, he's a goofball. Pretty funny, but this book, The Holy Roller, it's a little bit of a, almost like a Coen Brothers type thing. Joe Troman, he was from the band Fall Out Boy. He's done some writing too. He wrote The Axe, which was a heavy metal horror comedy that he co-wrote, actually. But you've got Rick Remender also here writing. So I think he probably keeps everybody in line. The sample pages and stuff that I've looked at look pretty good, and the reviews were very good for this. Now, there's also, in addition to all the comedy, you've got Troman and Sandberg are also Jewish writers, and I think they're pulling some of what you see with anti-Semitism and sort of tapping into gallows humor about discrimination that's sort of embedded within this comedy. It's 9 issues. I think the last issue comes out in December, but this is a trade paperback collecting all 9 issues, okay? That's why it's kind of buried down on page 155. It will come out, I think, around the first of the year. I did not see this on Previews World for pre-order yet. You can still pre-order the December final issue 9. But this trade paperback is only $9.99? I say that with a question mark at the end. 9 issues, $9.99. You can probably get that at a discount from, once again, Cowabunga or your favorite retailer if you pre-order from them. And that's going to be less than $1 an issue. Not a hard ask, not a big barrier to entry. I mean, it may be comedy with a message. I don't typically go for comics with a message or the message trademark per se. But this actually sounds pretty good, and Remender sometimes has it, and I think Sandberg is funny sometimes, and it's got this trick bowling ball wielding superhero vigilante type thing. And again, the art looks fun, and it's not a big ask, not a heavy lift, only $9.99. It's called The Holy Roller. It's the full 9-issue series in trade paperback on page 155 from Image Comics this month.
Hey, this is James here with another pick in the previews catalog. I'm in the distillery section. I'm going to be doing a recording on page 28 for Warm Fusion. But I did want to point out for those of you guys who are into this, if you want a Christmas story, and I guess this is going to be coming out late because I think these books are supposed to come out in January. There's one called Through the Boughs, a Yuletide offering from Distillery. So a big magazine. It looks kind of cool. It's a one shot, but not my thing. But if you're into that, check it out. But I'm over, like I said, on page 28, where I'm looking at Warm Fusion number 1. It's written by Scott Hoffman. I don't know which one's the writer and which one's the artist, because it says by Scott Hoffman and Alberto Ponticelli. And I just don't know which one's which. And I think Alberto Ponticelli's the artist and Scott Hoffman's the writer, but it's by the two of them. We'll just go with that. Like the cover, A. Cover B, not so much. But it says writer Scott Hoffman, and there it is for the writer. Nostalgia Wag, those are 2 things he's done, of Scissors Sisters fame, teams up with artist Alberto Ponticelli, Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, Goodnight Paradise, Orc Island, for a sci-fi horror mystery that pushes the limits of grotesque. This is not a John Mayo book. This is a James book, because it is grotesque. Okay, New York City over the 2 decades into the future has been devastated by crime, ongoing storms, radiation from a terrorist incident in Times Square, and the genetic mutations caused by a life-saving cure, quote-unquote cure. After a series of murders ripped through the city's brothels, an escort named Vin Young, who cosplays as Snow White and is one of the generation formed victims, decides to help find the killer of killers responsible, reluctantly joining forces with Jemond Hanover, the lone cop assigned to the case. The two are led to a biotech megacorp launching a cellular metal called Warm Fusion, a pioneering technology meant to replace prosthetic limbs and soon confront the sociopath scientist Nicholas Fleischer, his monstrous alter ego, Mr. I think it's Barnaby, and the hideous monster that he'd been secretly creating. Warm fusion is dark sci-fi, blah, 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 blah. It sounds like something I would like. It sounds like something people who like stuff like I like may enjoy. I haven't read a lot by Scott Hoffman. Alberto Ponticelli, I have seen his art before, and it was decent. If it sounds like something you would like, check it out. I've been enjoying a few books from Distillery. The one thing that I will give you as a warning, though, they are magazine size. So you'll have to have a magazine box or buy one to store these in. They will not fit in a comic book box. But they really, Distillery's whole claim to fame is they feature the art in large format size. So on to my next pick.
What's up, guys? X-Men Patrick here, and I am on page 227 in the previews catalog. I'm looking at Star Wars Bad Batch Ghost Agents number 1. I am pretty sure this is the first Bad Batch comic book. Besides that, I like Bad Batch. I watched the first 2 seasons. I have not gotten to watch the third. I heard what happens in the third, but it looks like this is before that. It could be, anyway. Alright, so we got the Bad Batch is back for another high-octane adventure set in the Clone Wars. Their mission? To hunt down the mysterious Separatist ghost agent who executed a daring heist on Coruscant. The thief's trail leads Hunter, Wrecker, Crosshair, Tech to the seediest corners of the galaxy where kingpins and thugs threaten the clones' mission and their lives. Have the Bad Batch met their match? So there's only 2 books, cover A and cover B, pretty much it looks like. And $3.99, so we're holding the price at $3.99. I thought it was going to be $5, but most of my comics are actually $3.99, except for, I think, the Ultimates. So, Star Wars Bad Batch. Love the Bad Batch. Wrecker's my favorite. Crosshair is still alive in this. I heard what happens in Season 3. Don't get mad at me for spoilers. I didn't say anything unless you knew what was going on. So, Bad Batch comic book. I'm in. I want to check. I hope it's not, a one-shot. It doesn't say anything about being a one-shot, but we'll see. All right, on to the next pick. What's up, guy? Patrick here. I am still in the main previews. I am now on 332. I am now in IDW. I was in Dark Horse before. I am looking for my Ninja Turtles. They're not in here. This is what we were talking about with Ninja Turtles. They somehow always are now, backlogged. Where did they go? I know number 2 just came out. Number 3 is coming out next month. Number 4 the month after. But then after that, where are they? They're taking a break already. I love my Ninja Turtles. I'm not the biggest Naruto fan, although everyone's really excited for this Naruto stuff. But I'm not looking at Naruto. I am looking at Night Watcher. Now, there is a spoiler in this if you don't know who Night Watcher is. It was very easy to find out who Night Watcher was as soon as they did the 4 Turtle books. So, I'll just tell you who it is. Page 232. Ninja Turtles, Night Watcher number 5. I have no idea if this is going to end soon. It doesn't say continuing, it doesn't say out of 5, out of 6. So Junie Ba is the writer. Artist and cover artist is Pharaoh Pei. Enter Leo Ban. Discover the origin of Night Watcher's foe who has been controlling Mutant Town. How did an injured bear who lived in the zoo become a mutant kingpin following the events of the Great M-Bomb Drop? How has he assembled every piece of information about Jenica's life before and after she became Night Watcher? Alright, so that was it. Jenica is Night Watcher, obviously. Did the other 4 turtles? Where did Jenica go? It's a continuation of the Ninja Turtles from, I don't remember who's writing it now because my brain is shot. It's nighttime. So Night Watcher's greatest fight begins now. It's life or death. And if anything goes Leo Ban's way, neither of them may make it out of this fight alive. $3.99. Like I said, my comics, for whatever reason, I'm not complaining, but my comics are starting at $3.99, which is awesome. 32 pages, full color. And I haven't read this yet. I am very slow at reading right now because we're in the middle of moving. I know I just moved a couple years ago, but we're moving again to a smaller house now. It's just been chaos. This is actually my last pick in previews. Get out there, get on these mics, record. It's really easy to do on your phone. I do it at home and my microphone and everything because I'm actually in school also taking night classes for a plumbing inspector. So I have all this set up already. So why not make some picks? I want to hear you guys' picks because I just sent in my September order. It was 10 books, I think. That's bad. It's really bad. All right, on to the next pick, guys.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog. on page 236 from Abram Comic Arts. It's Mighty Marvel Calendar Book of Visual History. Now, this is a hardcover. It's 272 pages for $50. It's pretty good size. It's 13 by 13. And this, for me, like encapsulates, or however you want to say, incorporates, when I close my eyes and I think of the Marvel characters, these, if you look at the cover here that's on this page of 236, this is how I think of the Marvel characters. This is what they look like to me, I guess, because this is when I first experienced them. But I'll just kind of read the solicit bit. This is a great piece of Marvel history that I didn't realize, I think, how good it was at the time, but I wish I had all of these, and this is a good way to hopefully get the content from all these calendars. But it says, from 1975 to 1981, Marvel created seven consecutive calendars that were as artistically designed and captivatingly written as any of their comic books. Each of these annual calendars, whether they celebrated the bicentennial, 1976, or spotlighted a specific character such as Spider-Man, 1978, Hulk, 1979, or Doctor Strange, 1980, featured heroes and villains across the pantheon of the Marvel Universe, and all shared inspired features. These included visual callouts for birthdays of noted Marvel staff and creators, key moments in Marvel history, special events, famous quotes from fan favorite issues, and other celebratory mentions, with original art created especially for these calendars by Jack Kirby, John Buscema, John Byrne, Frank Miller, Walter Simonson, Gil Kane, George Perez, Gene Colan, Jim Starlin, Sal Buscema, Mike Plug, and dozens more. Never before has all of this astounding art been reprinted, and the complete set of covers, interiors, and gorgeously designed monthly entries are reproduced at the original size in this beautiful oversized hardcover package. So consider, you know, the size of a typical calendar, and I guess it's going to be that size. So as you can tell from the list of the name of those artists, I mean, it's truly a who's who of helped create the images that we think of when we think of the Marvel universe and all those great characters that they encapsulate. So it is a bit of a hefty price, but I highly recommend this if you are a classic Marvel fan. Like I said, for me, it's a bit nostalgia here, but it's something that I would love to be able to flip through and kind of relive those memories of things that I enjoyed as a kid.
Hey, this is James here with a pick on page 244 in the Alien Books section in the back half of the catalog. I think this is the back half. Yeah, it looks like the back half. Okay, we are getting a book called Nexus Scourge number 1, and it is a two-parter. It's $4.99, but it's 28 pages, so it'll be 56 pages for two of these things. Art looks decent. It is written by Mark Baron, art by Kelsey Shannon. And I know for those of you guys who are on the Slack channel or on the forums, Chris Brawley, Brawlinator, he's on the book club too. Basically, Chris works with guys helping them create comics, like literally from the ground up, you know, putting together artists, lettering, things like that. He's kind of shared a lot of stuff. Him and Andy Tom comes into the book club too. And Andy Tom is an artist. So it's kind of cool seeing the perspective of people who actually helped in creating comics. The stuff that goes into it and everything. So whenever I see one of their projects come up, I always like to point it out. This one, like I said, Mike Baron, I think he did the Hogzilla stuff, or no, the Florida Man stuff, which I did pick up. They were doing it originally through American Mythology, so this Nexus one is Alien Books, who Alien Books is expanding right now. They've taken on the Valiant license too. So if you want to support one of your people from basically the Slack channel on the forums, this is a book you want to check out. I have never read Nexus. I think there was a collection that came out. I would message Brawley on the Slack because he may be able to point you in a direction where you can get a collection of the old stuff. But this is a new one, a new number one, Nexus Scourge. It says, the Eisner Award-winning science fiction vigilante is back in a universe-shattering tale that's essential for all Nexus fans. And I am not a Nexus fan. I've never read it. It says, Mike Baron and Steve Rude's Nexus enters a new era with classic characters and an all-new villain that's destroying the universe one planet at a time. It's a breathtaking new vision for the Nexus universe by series co-creator Mike Baron and up-and-coming artist Kelsey Shannon, who did Batman Adventures and G.I. Joe. Huh, I didn't know that. Okay, Nexus Scourge is an all-new era of Nexus, a two-issue event by Mike Baron and Kelsey Shannon, exclusively from Alien Books. planet-destroying action and a wry wit that's perfect for fans of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and classic Doctor Who. I'm excited to get on board. I'm going to support one of the guys I know from the Sock Channel. Pick this book up. I recommend all you guys pick it up. Who knows? If it's good, we might even do a book club on it. I don't know. But I'm going to pick it up. On to my next pick.
Rollinator again. And man, this is just a very big deal for me. I've been working, as I've mentioned here on the preview spotlight before, with Eisner Award winning writer Mike Barron on his books like Thin Blue Line and Private American and his Florida Man books and Bronze Star, the weird Western we did. And we're about to do a Sherlock Holmes meets Captain Nemo. It's an even better feeling when the mainstream comic press decides to also take a shot on the book. And that's exactly what's happened with our latest project. It's Mike Barron's Nexus Scourge. And that is the character that Mike won his awards from. He and Steve Rood created this cosmic vigilante that's just excellently crafted and just gorgeous to look at. And it got some pretty good reviews as a trade, or not as a trade, but really as an OGN graphic novel. It's called Nexus Scourge. And we started talking to the guys that are putting out Valiant Comics now, also known as Alien Books. And the head of Alien Books absolutely loved it and said, man, let's put this out as a 2-issue mini and just see how it goes, see how the sales go. And that's what they're doing. The story itself split beautifully into 2 chapters, and the artwork on this is absolutely beautiful. It's by Kelsey Shannon. It's a great Nexus story. You don't have to know anything about Nexus to enjoy this, but the fans are really going to love it because there's a lot of little tiny Easter eggs in there too. It's just a fun story, and Mike's humor when he writes Nexus, I think it appeals to people who are big fans of Doctor Who or Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But the action is, it's what you always wanted Space Ghost to do. It's just fantastic. It's brutal. This is definitely not for the kiddies under age 13, but this is comics the way it was meant to be. And a lot of people are very excited. If you are looking in the catalog, I may have skipped this part, but it's over on page 244. And you might be forgiven for mistaking page 239 as though Nexus is returning to the Valiant universe. Now, we've casually made some comments before. It wouldn't be out of the question for Nexus to show up in the Valiant universe. He actually did. Back in the early 90s, did a crossover with Magnus Robot Fighter, but that was a licensed character then, so there's no way that that would be revisited or probably ever reprinted again, although I have made a few inquiries. But this is Nexus Scourge issue 1, and it ends on the perfect note. And then, of course, the second issue will be out in January. This will be out the week of Christmas, I think. And got a couple of good looking covers there that were not part of the original OGN. So there's going to be some exclusive stuff in here. You guys, if you'll support this, I'd really appreciate it. We're really trying to make a big splash with Mike bringing Nexus back to comic books. And if you are a fan of Nexus, you will love this story. So check it out. I've probably just droned on long enough. It's on page 244. There's some preview pages or images on page 245. It's Nexus Scourge from Mike Barron and Kelsey Shannon. Check it out this month from Alien Books.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog. On page 253, it's Nosferatu Nightmares, number 1, from American Mythology. The original vampiric nightmare vision. In 1922, a vision of horror was unleashed upon the world, and over a century later, its haunting imagery still influences modern horror. This frightful anthology gives today's authors and artists an opportunity to tap into that primal terror and deliver Nosferatu vampiric tales inspired by the glorious silent black and white monster that has woven nightmares into our collective subconsciousness for decades. Join some of today's most creative horror creators as they pull you into the shadows with gripping tales of terror and this throwback to the black and white monster magazines of the past. So, as I've mentioned before, I'm a huge Dracula fan, and this Nosferatu movie from 1922 was an unauthorized adaptation of the story. but the main character was very believable as a true monster and not what we think of as the Twilight or Anne Rice type of vampires. Like these guys barely looked human. And so I think a lot of that terror or horror aspect has been taken out of the modern vampire. And so I do really like this particular take. It's a $4.99 comic coming out in December. But if you are a fan of that classic, Nosferatu television or movie that came out in 1922, I think this should be a fun take on getting to revisit that character.
Brawlinator again, and you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention another project that I had a hand in. It's on page 255 in the American Mythology section, and this is a little bit of another Christmas bonus. Florida Man versus Hogzilla. This is Gary Duba, the quintessential Florida man, on having more misadventures, and this time he's dealing with the legendary one-ton feral hog known as Hogzilla. What they're offering here, it's issue number one. There's the minus one homage cover, which was only available for like 3 or 4 days. It was an FOC only book. It's this very cool homage to Godzilla. It was a limited run poster. So this is sort of an homage to that with the giant hog coming after Gary. It's across the top. It says Florida Man written in Japanese. It says Hogzilla. It's fun. Check it out on 255. But and that's for just the single first issue. But they've also got beside it this great Boris Vallejo inspired cover of Florida Man holding up his sword. And, you know, it's done like the Vacation poster, if everybody remembers the Chevy Chase movie. And this is actually autographed by Mike Baron. Plus, you get a poster with it. So it's a little bit pricier. It's still the same story. There are only 50 of these available, bagged, boarded, certificate of authenticity. Man, American mythology has really been good to us. And what's great is having Florida Man, which is this, you know, it's comedy. It's funny books. The slogan is, we're bringing back funny books. But this is the same publisher that publishes Three Stooges and other comic works, you know, humor books. But also, they also do horror, too. It's sort of their bread and butter. But check it out. If you missed out on Florida Man versus Hogzilla number one, you're going to love this. It's on page 255 of American Mythology. Check it out.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog. On page 271, it's Epic NPC Man Hero Outage. So let me just back up about the guys that are doing this. So they have a YouTube channel. These guys are from New Zealand. They have a YouTube channel called Viva La Dirt League, and they have different series that they do on their YouTube channel. So they have different playlists. The one that I really enjoy the most is called Epic NPC Man, where they have an NPC named Greg the Garlic Farmer, who basically becomes self-aware. And you get to chronicle adventures through his eyes. And so they think of pretty much everything funny and interesting in video games, and they're able to do that. They even did like a Kickstarter in which they did a 30-minute semi-motion picture, I guess you could say. But anyway, lots of fun. This is an 80-page book for $20, so it is a bit overpriced for what I would like, but I think of it more of like supporting a Kickstarter, and I know it's going to be good quality from these guys. They are very, very good writers. But it says, based on the hit streaming show, Hero Outage features the heroic stylings of the heroes of Honeywood, a humble crew of farmers, fisherfolk, and blacksmiths. Can these NPCs level up and save the world of Azarum from falling into the worst fate of all? Utter boredom. So I do look forward to checking this out. Like I said, if you're any fan of fantasy or video games and that kind of thing, specifically fantasy and role-playing video games, I think you'll really like the Epic NPC Man series on the Viva La Dirt League channel.
Brawlinator again. For my final pick, this one just took me by surprise. I was at Free Comic Book Day, and the shop that I go to lets you get like a certain count. And I also go to Cowabunga for a lot of my books online, just order them online from them. Eric always sends me some of the Free Comic Book Day, but he didn't send me this Zero issue from Mad Cave Studios, of all people. It's Gotchaman, And it was Gatchaman Zero. And I looked at it, and it was absolutely gorgeous artwork. I was a huge fan of this property as a wee lad. Actually, it was known as Battle of the Planets, and it had been re-edited from the original. I think some of the stories and violence had been removed, and they had also inserted this R2-D2 stand-in to appeal to us Star Wars kids. I think that was probably back in 1979. If I'm not mistaken, doesn't matter. Gatchaman's fun, and it's an iconic Japanese animated franchise of bird-themed superheroes with the Phoenix Force and a ship that changes. It's just fun. It looks great. It's a heck of a lot of fun. They've got a trade out now that collects issues 0 through 5, so it's 6 issues, retailing for $17.99. If you just want fun comics and you even remember anything about Battle of the Planets or Gatchaman, I really recommend you check this out. It's been a lot of fun, and it is my final pick this month for the previews spotlight. Thanks again, John and Kay and James, of course, everyone who just participates and brings this show to us. Hope everybody has a fantastic fall and soon to be winter. Happy Halloween, everybody. I can't wait to listen to who you are recommending this month. Thanks.
Hey, this is James here, and this is going to be my final pick in previews this month. January is always slim pickings for me, as the catalogs kind of shrink down in size, but luckily I did find some stuff. I'm in the Magnetic Press section over on page 338, where I'm going to call out one thing that's a new thing, and then point you to two other things, which are on the opposing page on 339. They have The Hunchback of Notre Dame, written by Victor Hugo, illustrated by George Bess. George Bess masterfully adapts Victor Hugo's classic novel of unrequited love, set in the midst of medieval Paris in 1482, as it takes its turns towards the modern era. Quasimodo, a deformed bell ringer in Notre Dame Cathedral, is hopelessly in love with the gypsy girl Esmeralda, who has falsely been condemned as a witch by the archdeacon. In hopes of saving her from a fiery fate, he hides her in the cathedral tower, but safety isn't as assured as simply staying out of sight. The Notre Dame Cathedral casts a shadow over the entire tale, both literally and figuratively. One thing I'll tell you, this is 108 pages, it's a hardcover, $34.99. You will get a discount from Deep Discount Comics. This is a nice little hardcover. I like it. The art in here is fantastic, and the reason why I know that, even though it hasn't come out, is because I own the two things on the opposing page, which you can pick up. They're being resolicited, is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and Bram Stoker's Dracula. Will Eisner Award winners, their awards for the art and the story, so 2024 award-winning duo, are on the opposing page. I already own those. Pick it up. They're done with premium linen textured hardcovers with metallic foil elements for fans of classic horror. I'm going to pick up the whole series. Like I said, I already have the other two. I'm picking up this third one. These are classic stories, but done in modern art. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful art. And the production value is very good. And actually, the price isn't too bad, because with the discount, these are about $20. And for $20 for 108-page beautiful art and decent story, you can't go wrong. That's going to do it for me. I did want to say thank you to every single person who sends in a clip. I know it takes time out of your day or out of your week, whatever, but this is the one show where all of your voices are literally heard. It doesn't take very long. You can send in one clip. John's always said he'd rather have 20 people send in one clip than one person send in 20, just because you get various opinions, viewpoints, something that appeals to you might not appeal to me, but may appeal to someone else. And something that appeals to me might not appeal to you, but might appeal to your friend who's also listening to the podcast. So the more people that pick things, the more people might be exposed to things that they may enjoy. It's kind of cool. Also, I hope you guys get onto the book club. It's a ton of fun. Get onto the Slack channel. Ton of fun. If you guys are like, how do I get on the Slack channel? Join the forums. Tell John you're a real human being, because he gets a lot of bots on the forum. So he makes you send him an email telling him, yes, I asked for permission to get into the forums, because I think he has it a little bit locked down because so many bots were going in. And then there's a thread in there on how to add the Slack channel. And literally, you just click a button and you have it. I have Slack on my phone. I have Slack on my computer, my PC at home. So it's something you carry around, and guys message from time to time. Hey, what are you reading? Hey, I'm enjoying this. Hey, there's a spoilers channel. Hey, there's a Conan channel, things like that. I want to thank John for his time that he puts into this, editing, and also he sends in clips too. Thank you for your clips, John. And until I see you guys on the side channel or until I talk to you guys on the forum, and until next month's preview spotlight, take care, guys. Bye.
The Mysterious Traveler. This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back and get a good grip on your nerve, if you can.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog. On page 358, it's Silver Age Classics, The Mysterious Traveler, Volume 2, Softcover. This is from PS Art Books series, and this continues the comic book adaptation of The Mysterious Traveler Old Time Radio Show, which is really, really good. Good suspense. I like it because the narrator is a similar to a shadow type of narrator in which he sits, you sit next to him on a train, and then he finagles his way to tell you a story. And at the end, when the story is concluded, he wants to tell you another story, but then he realizes it's time for you to get off. And so he invites you to see him again at the next week, you know, the next time you'll see him at that same, on that same train. But this comic series was really good. It was created by Steve Ditko. It says, courtesy of the Traveler's creator, Steve Ditko, this title beat pretty much everything else on the old creaking metal comic book spinners. What it may have lacked in the comic book equivalent of $100 million SFX budgets, special effects budgets, The Mysterious Traveler made up for it with sheer class, style, and out-and-out pizzazz and charm. A clear inspiration to the hugely popular Amazing Adult Fantasy, which of course that's where, you know, Spider-Man made his debut with Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. It says The Mysterious Traveler is surely the original adult comic, and published for the first time in our popular softy format, is absolutely still worth the read. Collecting Tales of the Mysterious Traveler, issues 6 through 10, from 1957 to 1958. So I do highly recommend this if you are either an old-time radio show fan or a Steve Ditko fan, pre-Spider-Man, pre-Marvel, and pretty much how he was able to adapt this in a way that, you know, like his other, you know, I call it mystery titles. He did such a great job with that. So I highly recommend this. The art is impeccable. The story is great. And you just can't go wrong with a Steve Ditko story. This is Jason with one last pick, not in any catalog, Marvel, DC, or previews. It's on a site called FundMyComic.com. It's called The Atlantean, Autumn 2024. So this is a continuation of, as far as I can tell, the story about Kull. This particular team did a graphic novel adapting the entire story of The Shadow Kingdom by Robert E. Howard, starring King Kull, a few months back. And it looks like they're continuing with the character. It says, The Atlantean. 50 pages of Robert E. Howard's premier sword and sorcery characters in a regular magazine format in the legendary style of Savage Sword. So looking down at the campaign, it says it's perfect bound, so I know that's not for everybody. It's called The Atlantean. As far as I know, this one's considered autumn 2024, so it's going to be, I'm assuming, a quarterly, so 3 to 4 times a year. It says, in the time before Atlantis sank and the lands of the world were savage and untamed, one man would claim his destiny. After the reality-shattering events in Volusia, as told within the pages of The Shadow Kingdom, Kull and Brul take a solemn vow to hunt down and destroy the hidden empire of the Serpent Men. These are the tales of those journeys and their great hunt. It says, they're just kind of giving an update on the campaign. It says they're 100% finished on pencil art and just have to ink and letter the final 10 pages. They're going to try to approach this in a black and white
Savage Sword of Conan magazine format. So it looks like that's what they're going to do. They have some pages here of preview art, and it says, it talks about the previous adaptation. It says, our last production, an adaptation of Robert E. Howard's The Shadow Kingdom, is historically considered as the first sword and sorcery story. So as huge Howard fans, the production was a labor of love for us, and we were overwhelmed by the positive response from our readers. So, continuing the story of Cull and Brule's hunt to find the heart of the Serpent Kingdom and kill their ability to sway the events of the human world is the tale we will be telling in the pages of The Atlantean. The Atlantean starts with its first issue here in autumn 2024, with the next issue already in production for spring 2025. Each issue will be 50 pages of lovingly crafted black and white comic book art and editorial, with special guest writers, a superb painted cover, and condensed episodic storytelling. So it looks like this will be a good pickup, and I highly recommend this for fans of Robert E. Howard, Conan the Barbarian, of course, and Cull, who to me is an underserved, an underappreciated character. So I highly recommend this. It's on FundMyComic.com. I will put the link on the comic book page forum, as well as on the Slack channel for anybody who would be interested in checking it out. So it's definitely a sword and sorcery. It is set within the world of Robert E. Howard that he wrote, you know, with Cull the Conqueror or King Cull, and it's kind of fleshing out his story a little bit. So highly recommend this, and definitely check it out if you get a chance.
What's up, guys? Patrick here, and I am in the book section of this. I'll probably be at the end for reading books. So when I work, I do plumbing, and when I work, I listen to audiobooks because podcasts are only like 30 minutes long, an hour long. I'm working 6 hours a day. So I've been listening to a lot of books. I've heard a lot of great books. But the recent one that I really, really liked, and I figured I'll share with you guys, is Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros. It won a bunch of awards in 2023. It's book one of three of the Empyrean. Book two is out. Book three will be out, I think, beginning of next year. Yes, I listen to audiobooks. It's about, I think, 13 hours or 20 hours listening. I listen on 1.5. Let me get past all this. So, Fourth Wing. I'm fascinated with American dragons. Yes, there's a difference. Chinese dragons are like actual lizards, where American dragons have arms and legs. And yeah, so there's a difference. But fascinated with dragons. Loved Eragon. Read that whole series before it even came a movie. This is a fantasy book. I did listen to all of Tolkien's books too. Like, so this is a fantasy book. And I say it's more like Eragon meets Hunger Games. So let me read you guys the description here. Entered a brutal and elite world of war college for dragon riders from New York Times best-selling author Rebecca Yarros. 20-year-old Violet Soaringale was supposed to enter the scribe quadrum, living in a quiet life among books and history. Now, the commanding general, also known as her tough-as-nails mother, has ordered Violet to join hundreds of candidates striving to become the elite of Navarre, dragon riders. But when you are smaller than everyone else and your body is brittle, death is only a heartbeat away, because dragons don't bond to fragile humans. They incinerate them. With fewer dragons willing to bond than cadets, most would kill Violet to better their own chances of success. The rest would kill her just for being her mother's daughter, like Xander Ryerson, the most powerful and ruthless wing leader in the Riders' Quadrant. She'll need every edge her wits can give her just to see the next sunrise. Yet, with every day that passes, the war outside grows more deadly. The kingdom's protective wards are falling, and death toll continues to rise. Even worse, Violet begins to suspect leadership is hiding a terrible secret. Friends, enemies, lovers, everyone at Basgaiath War College has an agenda, because once you enter, there's only two ways out, graduate or die. I did listen to book two. Book two has a steamy scenes for you X-rated lovers. Book one, I think it gets close, but it never gets to the steamy scenes. Book two does. So, you know, just to give you guys a heads up, it does get steamy in book two. Fourth Wing is an amazing book. The second book is Iron Flame. Great book. I cannot wait for the third one, which is supposed to finish the series, Onyx Storm. Like I said, it's a cross between Eragon and Hunger Games. That's how I figure it out. It's like, I loved Hunger Games. I loved Eragon. I read them all before these things became movies, and they were amazing. This book is awesome. I can't wait to see, like, I think they would have to do this as like a animated movie. If they do it like a movie, that's going to fail like Eragon failed, even though Eragon was very close to the book. It failed because not a lot of people enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But all right, so that's my pick for a book for you guys to read or listen to like I do. Audiobook is 99 cents for the membership. Hardcover is only $10 and change. A paperback is $15 and change. How's the hardcover cheaper? I have no idea. But hardcover is only $10.66 on Amazon. So if you guys like reading stuff like this, follow along. Let me know how you guys are doing. All right. Peace. Oh, one last thing. You can get this audiobook on Libby, which is just like Hoopla. And you can also get it on Hoopla. And they actually have a cast of characters and sounds and everything. So I recommend if you want to do it the free way like I do, get it on Hoopla. Download it. Listen to it. Give it back. Free charge. Just get a library's card. All right, guys. Enjoy.
I hope everybody found something of interest in the pre-order catalogs this month. I want to thank Jason, James, Patrick, Chris, and Mike for sending in clips. Would have been a much shorter episode without you guys. The Preview Spotlight has an open submission policy. I want to get more voices and opinions in these episodes. We've got our regulars. They're great. They're awesome. But I want to hear what the rest of you think, too. Sending in a clip is as easy as recording it on your computer or smartphone and sharing it with me through email or Dropbox. Sending in a single clip is fine, and the reason I want more people participating, each of you have a different taste in comics, a different perspective on comics, and you may find things that the rest of us are just missing. It's flown under our radar, or you know something about it that would convince us to get it. And if you don't participate, then I don't know you're out there listening. You can participate by sending in clips to the Preview Spotlight, or by joining the conversation on the Slack channel and the forum, or by sending in questions for the monthly comic spotlight or the back issue spotlights, Astro City, Legion, Warlord, or just emailing me and letting me know you exist and what you think of the podcast. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. I think you're listening to this because you enjoy listening and talking about comics. So join the conversation. Now, the deadline for the Preview Spotlight is normally the second Saturday of the month. Early submissions are always appreciated. You can always check the main page of the Comic Book Page website for the latest information on the next deadline and to sign up for email reminders. The deadline for the next Preview Spotlight, number 204, covering the November solicitations, is 9 a.m. Saturday, November 9th, 2024. Again, I want to thank the people who sent in clips, and I want to thank you for listening. Hopefully you discovered something new in this episode, and with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.